If you find yourself taking a trip to Arizona or New Mexico, make sure to keep your eyes peeled for the deadly creatures under your feet. Some scientists refer to America's Southwest as the Venom Belt due to the high number of lethal scorpions, snakes, and spiders. Though natural instincts tell us to stay far away from these animals, some brave researchers have discovered how to create medication from evolution's best and oldest weapon.
Venom has been around longer than humans. Before there were neuroscientists, there were scorpions. Before there were biochemists, there were snakes.
That's Dr. Leslie Boyer, Professor Emerita of Pathology at the University of Arizona. She says scientific knowledge of venom was practically non-existent until 150 years ago. They knew it somehow emerged from fangs and stingers.
But we didn't know whether it was one pure thing that was essentially the same from one snake or scorpion to another, or whether it was multiple different things all mixed together. In fact, 130 years ago, the best we could say was that there were either two or three things mixed together in snake venom, something that we now realize is a great, great oversimplification.
Before people could use the scientific methods of modern chemistry, all venom knowledge relied on observation. Boyer says much of the information came from local community healers around the world where venomous animals are common.
And during those times when observation of the victim was all that we had going for us, there were many efforts made to treat snake bite using herbs, using injection or ingestion of the venom itself or the animal itself. There were all kinds of things tried. And at the same time, there were a lot of eradication efforts made. So people would find ways to get rid of snakes or get rid of scorpions. And there was a lot of common knowledge that went on.
That lasted until the 1860s, when Boyer says modern science collided with traditional knowledge.
We saw efforts to tease apart those components of venom and to understand how they were having the effects that they were on bitten humans.
Though modern scientists were able to learn from and build upon the information from healers, some of the partnership was overshadowed by conflicts between the two.
We would see scientists putting down the traditional healers or the people that had cultural understanding. And so there was a strange tension that brewed and bubbled and actually continues to the current day. It was around the year 1894-95 that we had some understanding of how to treat snake bite with anti-venom, which was made using very early understandings of how the immune system worked.
Without any knowledge of antibodies, scientists simply knew they could create immunity in animals by injecting them with small doses of venom. Then, after a year of shots, the animal's blood had some mysterious element that could be given to humans, protecting us from that same venom. Boyer says the immunization process was originally tested in many creatures, including pigeons, guinea pigs, and dogs.
If you gave one of those animals a tiny, tiny dose and then came back in a couple of weeks and gave it a slightly bigger dose and then came back in a couple of weeks and gave it a slightly bigger dose, you could escalate the dosing of venom so that a year later, the immune system of that animal was so powerful that it could withstand 1,000 stings.
But the best animal for the job ended up being horses.
Today, almost all anti-venom used in the world is made using horses. There are some other animals that are involved, and there are some cutting-edge research efforts to make synthetic or other anti-venom products. But the gold standard remains 120 years after it was invented, horse serum from horses that have been immunized against venom.
So out of all the mammals tested, why choose horses? Boyer says a lot of the decision comes down to sheer size.
They have a lot of blood to share. You can take a gallon of blood out of a horse without it even fainting. It's like donating a unit at the Red Cross. And the horse can go back and continue to live at your ranch and continue to make more antivenom while you process the blood into a drug. Horses are also very nice. They get along with humans. They'll do almost anything for oats. And so you can train horses to come on over and accept their shot and have their blood test done. And it can be done very humanely and nicely, and modern ranching methods take advantage of this. And there are whole herds of horses that quite placidly participate in antivenom production.
Horses also live an average of 25 to 30 years, a much longer investment than if scientists used a pigeon. And though researchers can make one antibody in a lab, Boyer says the horse's immune system is still better at biochemistry than our current technology.
The horse can have a shot of venom and can make antibodies against all 1,000 toxins that are in that venom all at once. So it's making 1,000 different drugs in a blend in its bloodstream. And when we take the horse's blood and we use it to treat a child who's been bitten by a snake, the horse's antibodies will treat the blood clotting problem, the nerve problem, the muscle problem, the flesh-eating problem all at once. Whereas our biochemists can make one antibody at a time. Until our biochemists have got a library of antibodies sufficient to equal what a horse can do, we're going to continue relying on those herds of horses.
And though we now know venom can contain thousands of components, scientists first thought only two or three elements were involved. Boyer says it took several decades for researchers to really begin to understand venom.
There was an explosion of knowledge that happened not that long ago, within the last couple of decades now, where we now have the sophistication that allows us to look not just at the genetics, the genome of what one snake inherits from its mother and its father, but also what we can call the venome, the mixture of chemicals that are in the venom of the snake or the scorpion. And all of a sudden, with this wonderful modern laboratory capability, we can see thousands of components, many of which are dangerous toxins, in a single venom specimen. And it's only at this point that our many, many, many biochemists and physiologists and neuroscientists around the world can tease apart the venom, take it one bit at a time, test that one bit, and see whether maybe it has a medicinal application, not just a toxicity.
Boyer says seeing how venom affects its prey inspires researchers to think of possible medical applications. For example, some scorpions and snails have venom that will either paralyze or create muscle spasms in their victims. This reveals that part of the scorpion's venom targets the nervous system, which Boyer says is the first step to researching its potential medical uses.
There's a good chance that if the disease condition you want to treat involves nerves, you might find something helpful in that venom. And so if you take a scorpion's venom and you separate it out and you find maybe 10 or 20 different interesting molecules in a single scorpion's venom, you might boil it down to five of them that seem to affect the sodium channel on a nerve. And then you might look at those five and see that one of them turns it on and one of them turns it off. And one of them waits until it's on and makes it stay on for a while. And then you might look at how different types of animal respond to those toxins and see whether it's the same as humans or different.
And also seeing if the effect is damaging, which Boyer says is often a matter of dosage. Though breaking down venom can be tedious, it's only the beginning.
If you and I were to choose one chemical today that we thought was a promising blood thinner in a snake venom, we might spend a year or two or 10 testing it in the laboratory and finding out whether it really was a good blood thinner. And if we were satisfied that it looked good, we'd then want to test it out in non-human subjects. And if it was safe enough to use in an animal and it thinned their blood without doing harm, we might move on to testing it in humans. And then there's this famous sequence of things where you do phase one, phase two, phase three trials in humans.
From the idea's inception to selling the product in America, Boyer estimates the whole process takes 20 to 25 years. Venom research can be expensive and have multiple moving parts that are hard to keep straight. In order to help simplify the process, Boyer created the VIPER Institute.
VIPER stands for Venom, Immunochemistry, Pharmacology, and Emergency Response. And we opened the Viper Institute in order to have a place where the sort of research I've just been talking about could take place kind of under one roof at the University of Arizona.
She was inspired to develop the institute because of her early work with scorpion stings in babies. If stung, the child had to be admitted into intensive care and in some cases could die.
At the time that my career was starting, we were just in the early stages of studying anti-venom made in horses to cure scorpion sting effects in small children. It was helpful to me to have a place to bring together the clinical doctors and the scientists and the technologists under one metaphorical roof so that I could apply for grants, so that we could all write up our reports together and work together as a team.
Since its start in 2007, the Viper Institute has collaborated with scientists across North America to improve understanding of how venom affects the human body. And venom research has already produced successful medication. Elements from a Brazilian pit viper help treat high blood pressure, while vampire bat venom helps heart attack and stroke victims. Boyer believes the research will continue to prosper and create unimaginable results.
What we need is a new generation, today's young scientists, the people who are studying for their PhDs today. They are going to look at this pharmacopoeia of molecules. They're going to expand it much, much bigger because there are so many creatures that we haven't even studied yet. And as they look at these different molecules, they're going to learn better and better how the human body works, how animals' bodies work, how venom molecules work.
And all of those findings won't help advance just medicine. Boyer says the future of venom can influence ecology and even the research process of modern science.
I hope that an entire generation of scientists goes wild with that, and that it goes on for another 100 years, which I'm confident it can with the amount we still have to learn.
You can find more information about Dr. Leslie Boyer and all of our guests on our website, radiohealthjournal.org. Our writer-producer is Kristen Farah. I'm Reed Pence. Coming up next week on Radio Health Journal.
We certainly are very interested in true cures. Cures, though, shouldn't blind us to treatments.
Why finding a cure isn't always the ultimate goal for researchers.
Then how hospitals can cause post-traumatic stress symptoms in children.
Like dropping a pebble in a pond, it can kind of work out in ripples and have different effects at different parts of the family.
All that and more on Radio Health Journal.
I'm Nancy Benson, host of Radio Health Journal. If you enjoy listening to Radio Health Journal, you'll also like our sister show, Viewpoints, which covers a wide array of topics from education to history to the environment. Here's a preview of what they're covering this week on Viewpoints.
Without them, there is no accessibility, there's no availability, there is no programming, there are no seats available, and families will continue to struggle.
Highlighting the undervalued workers in early child care. Then,
we can't solve poverty if companies like H&M are only paying half of what families need, workers need, to house, clothe, and feed their families.
The fight for fair wages in the fashion industry. I'm Marty Peterson.
And I'm Gary Price. These stories in depth this week on your public affairs magazine, Viewpoints.
And that's Radio Health Journal for this week. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram to learn more. And check Apple Podcasts, Google Play, and Spotify for a library of past programs. Plus, you'll always find previous segments and information about our guests at radiohealthjournal.org. Join us again next week for another edition of Radio Health Journal.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.